Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yeah.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia, solar-topia.
We started to burn many things we found, too many things we found. This is Harvey Slogo Wasserman back at the Solartopia show for another hour in Solartopia land on the PRN network. Glad to have you with us. We're going to have some great guests today. A few telephone challenges, but I think we'll get through them. Scott Scar, are you on with us?
I am, sir.
Well, you have no idea what a miracle of logistical balancing that is. I want to thank the crew in New York for working through this, but you're with us. It's great. We're going to be joined by Joel Siegel.
Joel's
talk about
on.
Puerto Rico. Oh, Joel's on. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Slugga.
Joel,
up?
You there? Hey, man. Miracle of technology. Paul Kangas, are you with us?
Paul's not.
Okay, Paul, we'll get Paul in a minute. We're calling out from the station today. We're working through all the CIA-inspired problems. we're going to start with Scott. Scott can only stay with us for a short bit. We'll talk to you, Joel, about Puerto Rico and also solar and Paul Kangas and maybe Simon Edelstein will also join us. Edelman will also join us. So, Scott, big news. The Trumpster has got bored and ran out of Twitter material and didn't know what else to do with himself, so he slammed a 30% tariff on incoming solar panels. What do we think about that?
Well, you know, he was trying to make a point by slapping China, and he did tariffs on washing machines and solar. But the problem with solar was this is one that will actually hurt U.S. jobs, not really create net U.S. jobs. We had two foreign-owned companies that made a tariff complaint because they were going bankrupt, and the U.S. trade rep started a process to create a finding of harm, and then they recommended a series of recommendations to the White House. To the White House's credit, they didn't do the most extreme ones, but they started with a four-year 30% tax credit that will drop 5% to 15% by the fourth year. They will let 1.25 gigawatts of panels come in before they do that, though, per year. And we think that will retard the solar market around 8% and lose somewhere around 60,000 to 80,000 jobs.
Well, you know, I have a piece up at progressive.org, which I've sent you. And, you know, what's the deal here? Why did they do this? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, the idea is to, technically, I suppose, to foster a domestic industry. But the two companies that are pushing are both, one's owned by Germans and one's owned by the Chinese. I mean, really?
Really? So, well, that's the point. It's all, as Washington so much is, it was a cosmetic play. And if you were going to do something like this, you should have done it 10 years ago when manufacturing was moving offshore. The problem with this is now solar manufacturing is automated. Actually, it takes very little people to mass manufacture photovoltaic panels. It employs a lot of people to warehouse, distribute, install, and service solar panels. And, you know, so right now, solar employs more in the United States than the extractive fossil industries, coal, oil, gas. And so, you know, and it's been growing over 24% as of last year. So it's growing. It's geographically dispersed, not in, you know, five states like coal. So it seems to me you want to increase jobs like crazy all over the United States, not do symbolic things that will, in the end, not bring you any jobs.
So if do you think that this this tariff, bottom line here, will succeed in fostering any domestic production?
You may get some small manufacturers. I know there's been some dialogue with a manufacturing plant in that they're looking at maybe in Florida. Of course, Tesla just opened up its Buffalo manufacturing plant already, but that was before the tariff. So yeah, you'll get some manufacturing, but again, it's not going to create you're not going to create more jobs in manufacturing than you're going to lose in getting lower cost products. And remember, solar is part of the system. So you have mounting hardware and wires and inverters, and if you have batteries, you have charge controllers. And you have information technology, sensors, monitors. That's 60% of the system. So, you know, in the end, it's not going to be a death knell for solar. Solar is going to expand anyway. But you're going to lose jobs in the process for absolutely no reason. And so to me, and by the way, we had all five conservative Republican think tanks, you know, like the Heritage Foundation, but all five of them against this tariff. So, the oddity of all this is you just had administration wanting to make a ceremonial slap at the Chinese on a broader issue, and we were the guinea pigs.
Well, it's outrageous. I mean, to me, my theory is that Trump, you know, I think we've seen after a year of Donald Trump that his primary objective in life is to lead the news cycle. And they must have had a slow day, you know, he didn't have anything to come up with. So this is what he did for the day. Obviously, completely no sane reason. I mean, my understanding of Scott Sklar, and I didn't properly introduce you, by the way, Scott Sklar, who's been on the show a number of times before, as has Joel Siegel, who's waiting in the wings here, is one of the world's leading experts on solar. You're an adjunct professor at George Washington University, and you've been in solar since before the sun was shining. So
almost.
Yeah. So the bottom line here is that I think that they just did this to do something. And what's amazing to me is that the Koch brothers were against this. I mean, how do we explain it? The Koch brothers were totally vested in extractive, you know, coal, oil, and gas. I don't know if they have any nuclear, but they came out against these tariffs. That's really amazing to me.
Yep. Yeah, there is no substantive reason to do what they did.
Except to, you know, create more confusion and take up the headlines so we don't talk about Putin and China and Russia. I mean, that's basically the best I can tell. So, but also, you know, solar has been falling so rapidly that we wonder if this is actually going to have any impact at all. I mean,
over time, it's not. By year 3 and 4, it will have no impact because the tariffs are low enough and we'll be able to reduce costs in the other areas. In the first quarter of this year, which is the highest tariff year, we won't be hurt because folks have been stockpiling panels, solar electric modules, because they knew the tariff might be coming. And of course, we also have the 2.5 gigawatts before it clicks in. So you won't see it really for the first quarter, maybe the half of the year. But then you'll see prices moving up and, of course, sales going down and then people being left off.
Well, let's hope in the interim that somebody actually does start producing solar panels here, it would be a good idea. And the piece I have in the progressive.org website, you know, there's a quote from Sandra Levin, the former senator from Michigan, just really ripping the Chinese for their bad trade policies. And there's certainly no angels. I will say one shocking thing that came out of this, you know who supported this move on the Trump's part? Of all people, Al Gore. I mean, he's at Davos where all these rich guys hang out, and Al Gore came out and said he agreed with the tariff hike. I mean, what drug is he on?
Well, again, you know, I understand, and I do, the desire to build U.S. manufacturing capacity. And I ran the Solar Energy Industries Association, the trade group for the U.S. manufacturers. So, of course, I understand that. But, again, it's the wrong tool. You do a manufacturing tax credit. There are other tools to drive U.S. manufacturing than to try to play around with the international trade system and crack up prices so it puts people out of work. We want a huge deployment of solar. We want to build up the delivery network for solar at a much larger scale if we're going to meet greenhouse gas needs and as your Puerto Rico guest will talk about, the resiliency needs in the United States. And so we need not to curtail installation and distribution. We need to support that. And if we want manufacturing, there are several other tools that will drive U.S. manufacturing other than a tariff and will be far more precise.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. I mean, that a solar trade association, which you would think would want protection from imported solar panels, has come out against it. I mean, it really is an aberration that the industry, which would normally want to support barriers against imported, product, in this case, really doesn't want that and has come out strongly against it. Okay, well, Scott, I know you got to run. Thank you for this.
Thank you very much, and thank you for covering the issue. And it sounds like you have a great group on. I've been to Puerto Rico. And I give my heart and my head to try to help you all. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, Scott. Scott Sklar, thank you very much. Take care. Joel Siegel, you're with us, right?
Greetings and salutations, my brother.
Hey, Joel, great to be with you. Do we have Simon Edelman on the phone? Or Paul Kangas? Okay, if you guys will let me know, the incoming 888 number is a problem, but we will have, you guys can call out from the studio. We're missing Simon and Paul. But Joel, I know, is more than capable of filling a few hours here to talk about. Let's start with the solar issue. I know you're a big solar advocate and solar fan. How have you reacted to this tariff from the Trumpsters?
You know, your analysis was, I think, spot on. And then Scott, this genius from George Washington, boy, do I need to meet him. He really is very difficult to read because the industry that he says he wants to expand is coal, which, you know, is a dying industry with dying people who actually, you know, mine the coal. And is he doing this to, you know, protect the coal industry and lift those workers up? Or is he doing it, as you said, to get in the news cycle? Or is he doing it to punish the Chinese? I mean, it's hard to say with the Trumpster. What we do know is that you wrote a great article, I believe in the Progressive, pretty sure it was your article, where you said that there's thousands of jobs, you know, are going to be lost and as a result of this act. But, you know, let's go back to the Marshall Plan of World War II. If America could rebuild Germany and Japan, that was devastated, right, from World War II, especially the bombing raids in Dresden and Tokyo. Why can't we do a Marshall Plan of a domestic solar production? Because the cost of panels, as you've noted in your article, has gone down. So why don't we just make sure that those manufacturers either get a tax credit or direct subsidies so they can produce solar panels at a competitive rate so that solar farms and rooftop could be, you know, you don't need to import the solar panels, but that would take, you know, like thought and political will by our members of Congress. And, you know, but I think that's what we're going to have to do. We have no other choice but to go solar and wind and geothermal, because fossil fuels is going to create, as you know, life, you know, ending climate change.
Well, it's interesting. I've had Peter Matthews, who's a professor of economics here in Southern California, on a couple of shows about this.
Right.
And his point is, I also had Paul Guype on, a big wind advocate, and Paul Guype actually has supported these tariffs, whereas Peter Matthews points out that the real way to foster a domestic solar panel production industry would be to subsidize, to do what the Chinese do, and, you know, subsidize the industry here, build up the jobs, provide infrastructure, do all the things a sane country does when it wants to build up a domestic industry. I mean, that's what the Chinese have been doing all these years. They've been heavily subsidizing solar, even though they're building nuclear plants, and which is terrifying to me. And, you know, just keep doing this. So build up the industry and not build up tariff walls, which are going to completely be counterproductive, as we've seen. And, of course, the bulk of the industry here is based on insulation, not on the manufacturing. So this is something to think about. All right. So, Joel, let's move over and start talking. Of course, we've wanted – go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say that for many years I was the international director for the Chinese Democracy Movement, my first job out of law school. And, you know, I'm not for supporting the most brutal dictatorship in the world, that if you, you know, read poetry, they, you know, put you in jail and shoot you in the back of the head. I mean, you know, I don't really care about, you know, purchasing solar panels from China. I do care about displaced workers, but we can make them on our own. It's just there would have to be a conversation between our government, our federal government, and the manufacturers and the utility companies to make it competitive. But that's not going to happen unless there's pressure from the people. It has to come from the grassroots.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has. I mean, the reaction to these tariffs has been pretty fierce, not that Trump cares. And, of course, you know, on the tariffs, Trump, there's no recourse. This is a total dictatorial, I guess, range. There's no way you can reverse a presidential demand for a tariff. He just does it, says it, and that's it. You know, it's really outrageous. And it's bad policy in every way, shape, or form. Unless you're Donald Trump, and then you don't care. You just don't care.
don't care.
He doesn't care. He doesn't have to. He's Donald Trump. So there you go. Do we, by the way, have Paul or Simon on the phone? Have they been reached? No. Okay. So, Joel, let's talk now about Puerto Rico. Can you give us an update of what's going on down there?
Sure. You know, after two hurricanes devastating the island, about 70% of the power is back on, but about 30% of the power is not back on, which means thousands of people still don't have electricity. Imagine when you lose electricity for a day, how terrible it is. Imagine if it's been months and months and months and you're trying to refrigerate food and cook food. And second problem is their sewage systems are not been repaired, so there are people who are drinking toxic water. The U.S. military helicopters, a lot of the first responders, they have left. So you have nonprofits like, Red Cross, et cetera, who are there. But the 1,000 people ended up dying as a result of a lack of a ethical, moral, well-planned response, which, of course, the Trump administration, not having morals or ethics or even intellect, have allowed American citizens to die needlessly. There's a little light at the end of the tunnel. Tesla came in And literally within 15 days brought solar power, you know, to a hospital where people were on dialysis and saved their lives. So it's going to take years for there to be reconstruction. Most of the cell phones are, you know, they are on most of the, all the hospitals are operating again. So there's been improvements, but it's still thousands of people don't have electricity and are, and don't have access to clean, safe drinking water when, if we had a competent administration, you know, they would. So a group of us went to Congressman Ted Lieu's office, I think one of the best members of Congress that we have, and we're asking him to introduce legislation to solarize all of Puerto Rico by creating microgrids. I'm so fortunate. I'll be going to Puerto Rico in mid-February. A construction company that does solar houses is, paying my way for this, but we're in communication with the mayor of San Juan, and there's been an organization called Latino Corazon being led by a gentleman named Felipe Benitez out of D.C., and it's basically a Latino organization that'll be devoted, you know, to solarizing Puerto Rico and helping with its reconstruction. It's a very exciting new development because Puerto Rico needs a lobbying force in Congress and in the United Nations. And, you know, I think there needs to be some kind of a fund set up either at the EPA or Department of Energy, kind of like a super fund for climate change. And then one of the United Nations, because you can't depend on the United States when you have presidents like Trump. But, you know, there's progress, but it's still one of the most amazing tragedies since Hurricane Katrina.
God, it's just awful. So we've also now gotten news that the governor of Puerto Rico wants to privatize the utility there. Can you talk to us about that? Talk to Joel Siegel, by the way. Joel, let me introduce you for a minute. Joel is one of the great activists on the Puerto Rico issue. He's been working in Congress for decades on environmental, social justice, and other really important stuff. He's a great activist, and I've been on the show a number of times. And so it's an honor to have you on today. And you've been working full time, or really doing spectacular stuff on Puerto Rico since the horrible disaster there, the two disasters, and the third disaster is, you know, the Trump storm of complete neglect and hostility. We do want to thank the president for distributing three or four rolls of paper towels. That was really a major help to the situation. And so if you'll tell us now, Joel, what's going on in terms of the utilities and our hope to have the island be completely solarized, that would be helpful.
Yeah, thanks for that generous introduction. You know, it was people like me in my 20s who were inspired by people like you, who led the campaign, the No Nukes campaign. So I, you know, so much of what I ended up doing was because of, you know, leaders, progressive leaders like you. So thank you for all the years that you've spent as a leader on the environment and No Nukes. So I'm also a professional musician. So I love the No Nukes concerts that you started years ago. Well, you predicted this, Harvey, a long time ago. You said that what Puerto Rico would do is end up privatizing a lot of the island. And this is, you know, no different than the Republicans want to privatize the Postal Service, right? They want to privatize Social Security. And this has a lot to do with, you know, campaign contributions and this idea that, you know, that government is inefficient. And there was a lot of criticism about Puerto Rico's, you know, public utility. So, therefore, what do? You go in the opposite direction and you privatize, right? Well, that's the wrong direction. What they need to do is keep the public utility, but make sure that you go solar or wind or geothermal and do what are called microgrids. And it's a huge mistake. It's going to jack up utility rates. Whenever you privatize, who gets hurt? The consumers. What energy will they use? Cheap natural gas, right, or coal, and it'll be devastating, you know, to the people and to climate change. So that's why we have formed this organization, Latino Corazon, because most of the people in Puerto Rico don't want to privatize their energy. They want to solarize the island. The mayor of San Juan wants to solarize San Juan, and we intend on being her to help her and the people of Puerto Rico to do the will of what our fellow U.S. citizens want in Puerto Rico, solarize the island and keep the utilities public.
And so how will that help matters? What's that going to do for us?
You're saying if they keep the utilities public?
Yeah.
Well, if you keep the utilities public, that means you can vote in or out of office those who don't support clean renewable energy, those who don't support microgrids, those who are increasing rate hikes, you know, good old-fashioned democracy. Once you privatize, you know, you can throw democracy out the door, right, unless you have, you know, good regulators. But we've seen how great that works in insurance or even, you know, in America where, you know, the utility commissions are always in the hands of the utility companies. So you got to keep it public. It's just that it has to be adequately resourced. I mean, the infrastructure, the part of the this tax, you know, decrease on the very, very wealthy is going to really, really hurt Puerto Rico in terms of their overall quality of life, because they're going to end up paying higher taxes for energy. So you need a robust public utilities that can have, you know, the will of the people making the decisions, not people, you know, making billions or hundreds of millions of dollars burning dirty fossil fuels like we do here in America.
Well, okay, that's really important, and I think, you know, it's an important point to make. What do you think the chances are that we're going to be able to stop this privatization of the public utility in Puerto Rico?
I think it's very good, Harvey, because, you know, as we're building our grassroots movement, which is inside Puerto Rico and outside Puerto Rico, now we've moved to Congress. Now we're going to start our congressional briefings. Now we're going to start our trips into Puerto Rico. Now we're working with celebrities. You know, it's all up to the activist community and the progressive community and members of Congress and progressives in Puerto Rico and their progressive elected officials. I think it's, you know, it's always going to be an uphill battle, but that's why they call it the struggle, right? It's going to be a struggle. But groups like Latino Corazon, the hardest thing for progressives is always raising funding. So that's what we have to do now, is raise the money so we can hire organizers both there on the ground and here to lobby Congress of the United Nations, so we can get them the funding that they need to solarize the island. It's going to take money to do that. And in order to do that, you have to lobby Congress. You have to lobby the private sector. You got to lobby the United Nations. And you can't do that without funding for an organization. And that's what Latino Corazon is going to do.
Well, it's a fantastic undertaking. What's with the governor? Is the governor corrupt? Obviously, the mayor of San Juan, this woman, what's her name? The mayor,
you know,
of San Juan?
I have forgotten, forgot her name, yeah.
So she clearly is opposing the privatization of the national utility. The governor is supporting it.
He's
wonder how that's going to play out politically.
Well, the governor is a Republican. That's number one. Number two, he wants funding from the United States Congress. And so, you know, in his mind, if you want to get funding from Trump or from FEMA or from Congress, then you do what the Republicans, you know, ask you to do or pressure you to do, and that's privatize. At the same time, you know, who knows what's in the mind of the governor? You know, it's a great question, but we do know one thing, is that, you know, people have power, and that's the fourth, always, you know, the fourth estate, right? Or the fourth branch of government is always the people. So let's say his predilection is privatized and conservative ideology. If the people of Puerto Rico say hell no, we want a public utility, we want to solarize the island or do wind energy, you know, either, you know, inland or, you know, offshore, and they've got the funding to do so, you know, because there's a movement to make it happen, it can happen. But I just, again, these are U.S. citizens. So it's really up to us. And, you know, we Americans, they are, people forget that Puerto Ricans are American citizens. So we have a responsibility to help the progressive community there and help the people. We've abdicated that. In fact, I have to tell you, the progressive movement, for whatever reason, has not prioritized Puerto Rico. And I don't understand, you know, why. I was part of the movement to end apartheid in South Africa, right? So why can't we be part of the movement to end economic apartheid in Puerto Rico and colonial kind of exploitation of Puerto Rico? I mean, that it, you know, and that's why where I'm optimistic is we got great organizers from all over Latin America, from inside Puerto Rico, outside Puerto Rico. Now we got to go to Congress, meet the Progressive Caucus, Hispanic Caucus, and Progressive Caucus to weigh in.
All right. Well, Joel, see what else you want to add about this. I mean, it's a huge blot on our soul, what's been done to Puerto Rico. I mean, are people still dying there from bad water and lack of food and shelter?
Yes. There's been over 1,000 deaths. They underreported the deaths on purpose. A lot of the deaths were due to dialysis patients who were in hospitals and did not have power. There have been deaths due to drinking water that's toxic and you know, having caused other illnesses. Yes, people are still dying, and they're going to keep dying. And who knows how many people will die because of airborne diseases, you know, because of the heat, right? If you're in, you know, one of the hottest climates, I don't know if you've been to Puerto Rico, I have, you know, you start, you get off the airplane and you start sweating. And talking about 100, or schwitzing, as we say in Yiddish. There's a lot of diseases that you get from drinking polluted water and toxic water. And those diseases may not kill you right away, just like radiation, but eventually you're going to die, or you're going to become crippled, and or you might have, you know, go into kidney failure, right? And this is like, I have to tell you, it's like a bad dream. I still can't believe that we've gotten the point of such moral callousness that we're like saying, you know, hey, you're on your own, fend for yourselves. You're black and brown and speak a different language. You're not really one of us. You're not white. You're not really American, so go ahead and die. It's just, it's hard to put my arms around this tragedy. And then it left the news cycle, as you talked about in your progressive article. I mean, whatever happened to Puerto Rico, you know?
Yeah, God, it's a nightmare. Have you been down
there?
Back.
We just got to fight.
Have you been down there lately?
I'll be there in mid-February. And I've been connected by a high-level Puerto Rican activist who I got lucky, Harvey, and got connected to the mayor of San Juan. And apparently we're going to be in communication of, you know, the next week or two. And then I'm supposed to go down there in mid-February with a group of activists just so we can see what's up ourselves, report back, but also meet with the mayor of San Juan to show her our support and go over plans, you know, on what we can do to help the people there. It's nothing official, but we are going down there. And the group is a construction company where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, who solarizes houses, and they solarize apartments, and they are putting tarps up on homes that FEMA screwed up on, and they're being, you know, contracted out by the mayor of San Juan and by the government to build solar houses and fix the tarps, because FEMA couldn't even put up a tarp where it would be rainproof. So that's who I'm going with, along with other activists.
That's devastating. Well, tell people, are there slots on that trip? If someone listening in wanted to go on that trip, how would they sign up for it?
I think they could call. They could either email me or call me. You want me to give you my email?
Go ahead, please. Yeah.
Sure. It's joel.r.siegal, S-E-G-A-L, codell@gmail.com. And, you know, we want to take some members of Congress. It's called a codell. Codell is when members of Congress go to another country and then report back. But we're going to be organizing congressional briefings, congressional hearings. I certainly have good connects. I'm very lucky, you know, in the United Nations. So we're just beginning the fight. We're not going to let those people die and struggle needlessly because of neglect and indifference. You know, these are human beings. Puerto Rico is a beautiful people, a rich culture, great music. You know, I mean, it's hard to believe that we've allowed such a American citizens to go through this. Same thing's also very similar in the Virgin Islands. But, you know, the positives, right, is that most people can use cell phones again, right? There's 70% of the electricity is on. All the hospitals are back on. But there's still, especially in the rural areas, just roads and bridges that are still, you know, destroyed and not having safe water to drink. I mean, imagine if you woke up and you needed water and you had to drink Superfund water, toxic water, you know, from a river. It's just, you know, hard to believe. But yeah, if people are interested in coming, you know, let's bring it on. You know, getting this organization off the ground has been a lot of work. Latino Corazón, we got great leaders, and they have access to celebrities. So we're going to take some celebrities down there. And
who in particular?
We're going to win.
Who's going to go down with you?
I'm not sure. Unfortunately, I can't disclose that. But we got connects at the highest levels in terms of the celebrities. So all that's sort of in discussion right now.
God, it's mind-blowing. Now, have you seen corporations coming in and start to buy up land?
No, we haven't heard about that yet. But that does not mean, Harvey, that it's not happening. You know, that's why we got to go down there. And that's why we got to bring members of Congress. You know, we need some international observers there, too. I mean, whatever people think about Bill Clinton or Jimmy Carter, you know, they get media, or Oprah Winfrey or Barack Obama. There really needs to be high-level, either former elected officials and current elected officials who go down there and start doing some live reporting on MSNBC or CNN and turn the story back into the national news cycle, you know, or even if you could go down there, you know, if I would have one person go down, it would be you, because you've consistently written the best articles on Puerto Rico. So it'd be great if we could raise money to have Harvey Washington from Solotopia go down there, you know, to Puerto Rico.
Well, here's what we can do, Joel. When you go down there, I want you to be in touch with me, and we will co-write. You know, you'll be the eyes and ears down there, and we will co-write what needs to be done. I mean, it's really a very critical. It's just heart-rending to think about those people. How many? Do you have any idea of how many people have left the islands?
200,000
Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands.
200,000 have left.
God, and the most have gone to Florida, right?
Yeah, if 200,000 have left, and mainly in New York and Florida, and they are living in homeless shelters and they're living in substandard living situations. So, you know, we took a crisis in Puerto Rico, transported it to America, and you know, this is a country, as you know, that doesn't even take care of its own people who are poor, right, or of color. So imagine what happens when you come to America with nothing because basically of a storm that was induced and caused by fossil fuels, you know, burned in the United States and in the industrialized world. Now they come here and they have nothing, and they, you know, they have to start over. So according to Michael Mann, the great climate scientist, actually one of the world's experts, you know, I asked him a question recently here in Charlotte. We brought him to Charlotte to speak. I asked him, what happens if we don't transition to 100% renewable energy? And, you know, he's saying in the next 3 years, what he said in Time Magazine, he said, well, Puerto Rico may have a Hurricane 6, you know, or a 5. That will be a regular occurrence. So you build back Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, and then, you know, they get destroyed again because we haven't drawn down our carbon footprint. So this is, you know, we're in a crisis in terms of using fossil fuels. We've got to go to 100% renewable energy ASAP. And we went to Representative Ted Lieu's office, several nonprofit green organizations and activists and Latino ranchers and farmers. We've asked Representative Ted Lieu to introduce a bill to get us to 100% renewable energy based on very progressive targets from the leading scientists. And they are going to introduce that bill. This gives the progressive clean energy community an opportunity to actually have the most progressive bill considered the Medicare of all of clean energy and making sure we can, you know, be successful in addressing climate change. It's a very, very exciting development. I just came back from Washington, D.C., and at that meeting, we also discussed, you know, the idea of introducing legislation to solarize Puerto Rico, you know, because Ted Lieu has been leading that effort. He wrote a letter to FEMA requesting, you know, funding to solarize Puerto Rico. So we asked him, hey, you're the champion. Can we get the funds from Congress to solarize Puerto Rico? So, you know, that's a very positive sign.
Wow. So when is this legislation going to be introduced?
It'll be introduced. You're talking about the climate change, 100% renewable energy, right around June. So we have to vet it to the scientific community first. And we're working with Mark Jacobson on that. We're working with, Lester Brown, all the leading scientists who have, backbone. Then we're going to vet it to, governors and mayors who are progressive and the green community. We want this to be kind of like the H.R. 676, Medicare for All, the bill that I had the good fortune to co-author with John Conyers and about 60 doctors. We want this to be the cutting edge gold standard 100% clean renewable energy bill for the nation. So it's very exciting. You know, that's what, you know, I've written about 26 bills, and that's the way you pass a bill. You got to make sure that a lot of people get a chance to weigh in on it. And I'm just lucky that we know, like that gentleman, Scott, the solar expert from GW, I'd like to make sure that he's involved. And we want to have a transition for the workers because many of them will be laid off once we transition our fossil fuels to a clean energy economy. So this will deal not only with the transition of our fuel, but how do we deal with agricultural emissions? How do we deal with, you know, cutting down trees and forests? So it's a very, very exciting time, you know.
Yeah, it is. And very demanding. Well, as it always seems to be, it's the best of times and it's the worst of times. Joel, you've been doing fantastic work on this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
and we're going to have to update what's going on in Puerto Rico. It sounds like it's really, really still very rough down there.
Yes,
I mean, is FEMA a presence at all? In Puerto Rico, they can't even put up.
FEMA has very little presence in Puerto Rico, as does the military. Now it's Oxfam. FEMA has kind of abdicated their responsibility and basically said, you know, we've done enough. We're going to go. And it's now FEMA and Red Cross that's who's doing most of the work down there. And You can't expect a nonprofit organization to do the work of the federal government of the United States of America with our full faith and credit funding. That's a pipe dream. So thank God for those nonprofits. But we should have done and we must do a Marshall Plan of Puerto Rico. We could have rebuilt Puerto Rico and, you know, their electric grid. That could have been done already had we had a better response. But you know, once again, this is an abysmal failure of the Trump administration and FEMA. And I do believe that, as I said on your prior shows, and I think I'm right about this, that in order to do a $1.5 trillion tax cut to the wealthiest, you know, billionaires and millionaires in America, you can't do that if you're giving, you know, $30 billion to Puerto Rico. The math didn't quite add up, right? So I really believe that was one of the main reasons why Puerto Rico was left behind, so to speak, was to get the tax cuts to the millionaires and the billionaires. You know, I worked in that Congress for a long time, and I saw that over and over again, that in order to get a number that didn't seem to be too outrageous, you know, hey, $1.5 trillion tax cut, you know, and then lie and say it's going to help poor people. You know, you can't – if you say, well, we're going to help Puerto Rico, I think they requested $30 billion or somewhere in that range to rebuild it, then what do economists say in the press? Well, that's going to aggravate the deficit, as if it's not already aggravated enough, right? So, I think this is all politics. But it's also, you know, we need a more robust progressive movement to literally get out there and raise hell. And, well, we shall overcome, right? I always believed you gotta be an optimist, Harvey, you know, and just keep fighting. That's what progressives do.
Well, Joel Siegel, I mean, you know, it's just been an honor to have you on. And I hope that,
thank you.
You know, the work you do is just so staggeringly important. And it's just so shocking and awful to me that we've let Puerto Rico twist in the wind like this. So give people again your contacts.
Sure.
And so that anyone who's interested can try and
sure.
hook up with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's Joel, J-O-E-L dot R dot Siegel, S-E-G-A-L, at gmail.com. And I think your listening audience also needs to appreciate you, Harvey, because you're one of the few journalists that's keeping it alive and doing radio shows. You know, your articles, I've shared them literally to thousands of people and to members of Congress and the staff. And that has really helped. Your articles were unbelievably important in keeping our movement alive and keeping this issue alive, you know, in Congress. So I just want to thank you for what you've done. You know, your journalism is the best of the best, man. So I'm honored to get to know my hero from my youth, too, you know, to be able to talk to you and be able to work with you. You know, I have a few heroes, man, and you're one of them, you know.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Just remember, all heroes have feet of clay, and in my case, knees of clay. So, but keep sending me material.
Sure.
I did the piece I have up today at progressive.org. They're wonderful at that magazine, Progressive. And I had a final paragraph about Puerto Rico, which they cut and said that we should do a whole piece on Puerto Rico. So if you will send me material on what's going on down there, I would appreciate it, and I'll put up a piece in the next as soon as I can. If you can get more fleshed out context on people that are going down there and how people can do that, I think that would be great.
Just some other really good news. Dr. Reverend William Barber has spearheaded a poor people's campaign in 34 states. This is, you know, to replicate and to work off of what Martin King started. Sorry about the noise in the background. Helping Puerto Rico, I'm now in North Carolina. I'm honored to be the state policy, you know, director, or one of them, and one of their coordinators on the coordinating committee. And we're going to be advocating that Puerto Rico be part of this poor people's campaign, because these are poor people who are being impacted, and they are American citizens. So that's another powerful force. And a voice is, you know, Dr. William Barber, who's just a brilliant genius and a great leader. But keep your eye on the Poor People's Campaign. I do think that it's gonna transform this country. I think poverty finally is going to be addressed in a very, very serious way, unlike anything that I've ever experienced in my lifetime. But hopefully maybe there will be some articles you can write about the Poor People's Campaign and, you know, dealing with homelessness and health care and the prison population, but also dealing with, you know, the poor people of Puerto Rico. It's all together. It's all part of that quilt, you know.
Well, Joel Siegel, thank you so much. I appreciate your kind words, and even far more than that, your tremendous work here. So let's keep on touch on this. I'll have you back. If your cell phone works, what I'd like to do actually is have you on from Puerto Rico when you're down there. And so we can have you talking.
It'd be my honor. And what would be really cool is if I get the mayor of San Juan to be your, you know, special guest. That'd be terrific, too.
Well, yeah, you could probably do that once the phones are back up, standing next to each other, or each have a separate call. So let's make sure we arrange that, all right?
All right, brother. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, man. Thank you so much. Joel Siegel, from North Carolina. You can leave us now. We appreciate it, and I'll be back in touch with you, okay?
All right, Harvey. Have a great evening, man.
Yeah, okay, you too. All right, we are on. We got a few more minutes here at the Solartopia show. I did want to see if you guys in the studio could call Simon Edelman. He has a story to tell. If we have an open line, that would be great. And if not, that's the way it goes. You do have a new app at Solartopia and the PRN FM that we'll put out a notice on. I am in California. I just put up this piece. I mentioned it at progressive.org. It's about the solar tariffs and the travesty of the Trump administration. And I have finished a piece, which I'm going to send out in the next few days, about Donald Trump and his sexual endeavors. And I do want to mention this. A lot of people think that, you know, the more scandal surrounding his sorry sex life, the more likely it is that he'll be leaving office. And I do want to mention what's known as the Sukarno syndrome, which is that there's a famous story. There was a leftist prime minister in Indonesia, which is a very large country very few people in America know about. And in the mid-60s, this guy Sukarno, who was a nationalist, he wasn't all that progressive, but he did not like the American empire. And one day the CIA went into him. They had a tape of him having sex with many different women. I guess it was, you know, there's all different versions of this story after 50 years, but that showed him, shall we say, in compromising positions. And they gave him this tape, and they said, if you don't resign and do what we want you to do, we're going to distribute this tape. And he took the tape. Sukarno took the tape and distributed it all over the country himself because it enhanced his macho image, just even in a Muslim country, for God's sakes. So, you know, this thing with the Stormy Daniels and all these other sexual innuendo kind of stuff that Trump's been involved with. We already got, what, 18 women accusing him of sexual imposition. I mean, it's really outrageous. But with his base, it helps him. Because a lot of these white guys, these old white men, think it's really cool that he's gone out and done this with all these women. And, you know, it's outrageous, but that's the way it is. And when Bill Clinton had his liaison with Monica Lewinsky, his ratings went up. So, you know, it's yet another distraction from the destruction that Trump is doing to our country. And all this, you know, I'm glad to see the rise of the Me Too movement and the women who are coming forward. This is a very big deal. But I would not waste much time thinking it's going to bring down Donald Trump. That's not what's going to do it. What's going to bring down Donald Trump is the discovery, which everybody knows, but we don't have the hard smoking gun, that Donald Trump is wholly owned by Vladimir Putin. And it goes way beyond any kind of interference that the Russians did in our election. The bottom line is that Donald Trump went bankrupt a number of times. He's in a business, or he was in a business, the building trade, the construction in New York City. That you're not in construction in New York City without being connected to the mob. And what Putin is the Russian mafia boss. He's the Don Corleone of Russia. And I'm sure that many, many years ago, long before anybody dreamed that Donald Trump would run for president, let alone become president, he made his deal. So we'll talk about that later. Thank you, crew in New York, for weathering the storm. We'll be back next week with another hour in Solartopia. Thanks, Scott Squad, Bill Siegel. See you soon.
Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia, solar-topia, solar-topia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia.